Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and I have the privilege of talking to my friend, Ravi Kathuria. Hello, Ravi.
Hello, my friend Dennis. It's so special. The privilege and honor is all mine to be hosted on your show. Thank you for inviting me.
It is truly my pleasure. You know, most of the people that will be coming to you in our first conversation will be coming because they either know you or they got to you through Happy Soul and Hungry Mind. So I want to talk there about the impetus for you writing this book. What was the background, the sense of why you felt this was such an important piece to be getting out there for us all?
Ah, what a beautiful question, Dennis. Happy Soul, Hungry Mind truly has been a journey. And it certainly has been a journey in the writing of the book itself, but it is the journey of life. Somebody yes. asked me recently if I was inspired to write the book. And I said, no, I was compelled to write the book. As an author, I tell people, you feel like you become pregnant. And once you become pregnant, you have to deliver the baby. That's how, as an author, I realize it's a weird way of explaining it, but you know, it gets in your system and you have to write the book. But this book, yes. It took me 3 years to write the book, but the title came to me 6 years ago. So I know that this book has been in my mind, but really the yes. book is about my own life's journey. I mean, from when I was a teenager, I have always wondered about the spiritual aspects of life. I have always been drawn to it. And I have lived life as a family a person, as a businessman, and as a career professional. But the aspects of spirituality have not been far. They have always been there in life, and I have wondered about life. And this book yes. really is the culmination of looking at life and bringing together everything that I have known and I have heard about what is the meaning of life, why do we exist, what is God, where is religion fit, what is the difference between religion and spirituality, and all of these aspects. And I have sought to simplify and present that in this book, which is, if you will, a huge undertaking.
Oh, yes.
And you know, the challenge of presenting or really discussing, because the book is a discussion, it's not so much a presentation, it's not me, yeah. the author, presenting, it's a discussion between two characters and a vigorous discussion. And that added its own challenges to the book, but the thing that even now as people read this book and they come back and give me feedback, and I love getting feedback, and the question that I ask them, the first question I ask them, is does the logic hold? Does it make sense? And it gives me great sense of satisfaction when they say, yes, the logic is crystal clear, and the logic has helped me see life in a different way. I promise you, Dennis, that just sends sweet vibrations down my spine. I love using that phrase, but it is so endearing to hear that people come back and say, yes, what the book discusses makes sense.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, Ravi, because in my spiritual journey over my 70 years, what I believe deeply is that God, whatever that means, whatever that word means, I mean, I know we use that word, but I'm just going to use it in this sense, God, higher power, however,
yes.
but we're just for shorthand, let's just use the word God. That God would use my logical thinking, my scientific perspective, And everything that would be in line with whatever God's will and the grace is would be able to be run through and make sense.
Yes, how beautiful is that? Because, go ahead, please.
Well, that's what I got in this wonderful part in your book. What you were saying is that it works with our logical mind. It does not throw our logic out and says, well, though, just believe in this theory, and kind of, it doesn't matter whether you think it is or not. Of course, there could be very good metaphorical reasons to be able to do that, but I need it. I hunger. My mind, my hungry mind needs to have something that makes sense.
Oh, wow. How beautiful is what you just stated, Dennis. I have talked about this book. This book has been read by people of different ages, from millennials, you know, the 23-year-olds to the 80-year-old.
Yep.
And we, as a human race, for thousands of years, have listened to religious scriptures, and we have had religious leaders and spiritual leaders. And in the past, religious leaders have used mythology because the population was faith-driven, right?
Yes.
But now human race is at a different point. We see technology. We understand things. We realize that lightning is not caused by some Greek god in the skies,
mm-hmm.
who's shooting down lightning. We understand what causes lightning. We understand how things work. We understand that when we fall sick, it's because of a virus or a bacteria, not because we have made some spirit or God upset, right? As
exactly.
Human race has modernized and understand science, it needs and it hungers for a new definition and new clarification of the meaning
mm-hmm.
of life and the concepts of God and the concepts of spirituality. And this time is a very special time, especially this younger age. I was so surprised as I went around and talked to, as I was writing the book, I talked to several millennials and I found that a majority of them told me, I am interested in spirituality. And I will admit to you, Dennis, is that I was surprised. I said, really? Are you serious? They say, yes, of course. And to me, and I start with the millennials and I use them as an example, but everybody that I seem to talk to, and I was just sharing that because I was excited to write this book and hope that I would find people who would be interested in listening to what I have to say. But I'm finding that more and more people, that the majority of the people that I talk to, they say, I am interested in spirituality. This is a topic that I want to learn more about.
That is exactly my experience. That is exactly. I mean, I was thinking about that, and when I do some presentations, one of the things that I work on is, and that I'm working is, okay, we have IQ, which is what got us to our basic logic, EQ, and the IQ is the what. The EQ, which is our emotional intelligence, is the how.
Yes.
So now we have the what and the how, but that only gets us so far. There still has to be the SQ, which is the spiritual intelligence, which is the why. That's the purpose, and that's where I see when I connect with a millennial and you hear these aspersions about the millennial saying, well, they want to be a CEO on day one and they want to go ahead and run the company right. No, that's not true. What they want is purpose.
Yes.
You must show them why what they do.
Yes.
Matters.
Yes.
And
they
that's
want
what depravity. And Travis, in this story, in this wonderful story between Travis and Rishi, these conversations that they have, that's what he's looking for. He's looking for purpose. He's looking for meaning, how he was able to get through the calculable death of his young son. How does he get a chance to grieve and to go through that? And within that place, to have the deep and extraordinary conversations that these two men have, it's profound.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I have loved, you know, even now as I read the book, I cry. And I realize these are characters I have created, but whenever I read about Travis and his son, I cry. I mean, the tears roll down my, because it is incredible to have somebody lose a young son. And frankly, you know, I have wondered how you help such an individual in such a terrible situation. And as difficult as those situations is, we all have to come out and work out of that. And those are the times, I remember in the book, Travis says, he has this remark that he makes. He says, the next person who comes and tells me that, you know, Nathan, that's the name of his son, he said, God had to take Nathan away because God loves him. He said, I'm going to punch them in the face.
Yes.
And it is almost insulting to tell somebody you lost a loved one because some higher power wanted them, and that logic fails. And you rather people didn't tell you that, you know, that they would come in and console you and offer their help, but not give you or make statements that are so. I'm sorry, I'm getting moved. You know,
I'm very glad. The thing is, Ravi, is that what I'm so grateful that you used that, because you needed to show something in this book, in my opinion, that was so tragic, so difficult to deal with, in order to, that way you can show the entire panoply, you can show the entire range and say, okay, we need to work here because every single human being must go through the process of their own healing and growth and evolution and dealing with grief and dealing with how do we bounce back and what are the places where we're truly able to connect with something greater than we are, which is our purpose.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, the life is... life is a challenge. Life is tough. Life is hard. And what we need, we truly need, is spirituality to help us. We need spirituality so we can live life. And if spirituality doesn't help us, if religion, if all it does is give statements that we don't believe in and that don't help us overcome our grief, then then religion fails us. So we have to search. We have to take religion. We have to expand those definitions and those logics. And which is what I've tried to do with this book. This book is not about make believe stuff. This is logic. It goes back to the feedback that I seek is that, does this make sense? When people say, yes, this makes sense. I had feedback from one friend who said, look, I will never think about religion the same way ever again, right? I think that is incredible. It's because it gives context to how religion helps us, where religion fits, but also what are the limitations of religion. And that context we are missing. And then how do you bring spirituality into your life, and how do you leverage spirituality to lead a life that truly is peaceful and filled of happiness, even when you are in situations that are excruciating.
Exactly.
And the normal situations, and, you know, all of us. Go ahead, please.
I'm just taking a breath because I love what you're saying. I'm so in, Ravi.
Thank you, Dennis. It is we. I was hearing on the radio just last night about a play that is playing in Houston about King Lear, and the actors were playing out the play on radio, and they were talking about the play, and I think the takeaway they said about the story is that even the king, this is a king who wants to leave and retire, so he wants to not have to deal with all the problems of running the kingdom, but he still wants to enjoy the luxury and the pomp associated with, and he's looking for all the families who are there, who can manage, and there is so much infighting in the families between brothers and between fathers and sons, and it struck me that, you know, the stress that we face today in our lives because of the in the modern age, people have faced stress for millennials. I mean, stress is something human beings face, and the problem with stress is it robs us of the most precious thing that we have, which is our own lives. Stress keeps us from enjoying this fascinating, most precious of gifts that we have, and we've got to change around that. We've got to recognize that life is just flying by. We're really not relishing life because we are so caught up in the stress. And if the stress was only going to last for 3 days, like this polar vortex that we are all experiencing, then I would say, okay, deal with it. But it's sort of as if this polar vortex never leaves. And we have people who have been dealing with stress not for weeks or months or years, but for decades.
Exactly.
And it's like a termite that eats away our life, and we never come to recognize it. We just live with it, and then our relationships become shallower, our work becomes heavier, and we're sort of going through life at the surface, superficially.
I am, and so I think of this in the way in my own metaphor is because what I have a tendency to do is to be in a, think that the world is binary, good, bad, happy, sad, successful, not successful. That's the way I was raised. That was, and I've learned that it isn't. It's a gradient. It's between zero and one. So, and I put it in here because I put this into what you're talking about, what I get out of your work, is that the difference between going from mindless, which is a high-stress environment, to mindful, which is much more. And so if I can move along that gradient from 0 to 1, if I can move from a 0.67 and like move to a 0.71, I've moved significantly toward the mindful. I'm actually filling up. I'm actually feeding my hungry mind to have my soul become happier in that as I'm getting mindful. So that's what I'm hearing from you, is that this is our, the stress is taking us toward the mindlessness.
Yeah, I love the way you said it. And in the book I talk about, you know, water. Most of us, if we were water, we are at the boiling stage, right?
Yes.
And we're dealing with the stress and the constant stimulation that we have from electronics and people and our own mind. You know, our mind is constantly thinking. It never stops. Whether we are taking a shower or we are having breakfast or we have lunch, I ask people, I said, when you were having breakfast today, did you remember having breakfast? And they say, well, I know I had breakfast, but I don't really remember that because I was thinking about something. People are constantly thinking. They're thinking when driving, when they are thinking when talking to someone, right? They're having a conversation and they're thinking. They're always thinking. And even when we sleep in our dreams, we're thinking. The mind is constantly thinking. And that becomes a challenge. So we're all at, if not at boiling point, then close to boiling point. And we would all like to go down and be, you know, completely cool. But that will take time. But even if you step back from boiling point and reduce your temperature down and you say, okay, let me calm and quiet the mind, you will begin to see the benefits. You will see the benefits. It's like we're couch potatoes and we're sitting there. Now, it's very difficult to go from a couch potato to be a bodybuilder, you know, over a weekend. But if you go to the gym and you start seeing, you know, in a month, in 2 months, you will start seeing some benefits. And that's important, to start seeing the benefits and feeling good.
And that's what, and that's the one of the thing, one of my great life lessons, that is to start small and stay regular.
Yes. Yes. What a beautiful message. Is that the problem is in our lives and in our thinking, in our culture, we have expectations, like you said, these binary expectations, right? I want to be rich overnight. I want to be successful overnight. I want to lose 50 pounds overnight. When I go to the gym, the trainer, they say, what is the goal? How fast do you want to lose weight? And I said, that is not my goal. I don't have a goal. And they looked at me and they said, how come you don't have a goal? Look at yourself. You need a goal. I said, look, my goal is, no, I'm not joking, really. They said,
of course.
You know, you need a goal. They want to motivate you. They think that is the motivation. And I said, look, I don't have a goal. I said, the goal for me is to make sure that I come to the gym every day of my life till I live. That is my goal.
Oh.
Because if I do that and I work out, that will produce a transformation.
It will take care of itself. So much of life is showing up.
Up, absolutely. And the trainer had never heard that. Trainer had never heard that. Because they're all geared. These are, you know, young, very, you know, muscular, very trainer. And you know, she is motivated in selling memberships, and the goal is to get clients to sign up and say, okay, yes, you know, in 4 months I want to lose 12 pounds.
Right.
And that gets you motivated. But the problem with that is almost like being on steroids. And once she heard what I had to say, she appreciated that. And she recognized that this is it's a lifestyle change.
To have that lifestyle change, we have to have a mind style change, don't we?
Yes, absolutely. We have to have a mind style change. And we need to change our perspective on life.
God, I love it. You know, Ravi, this is why I want to have a series of conversations with you on this subject. I'm so grateful to have you in my life for our dear friend Bryant Price, who brought us together, and to get a chance to read this amazing allegory, this parable on spirituality. And as I read it for my first time, I saw this so clearly, because the embodiment of these two characters and their conversations, because conversation, I believe that is an art we are renewing in this time, is the art of conversation. And so I get to have conversations with you, Ravi, and that delights me immensely.
Dennis, you're a true friend. Thank you for these conversations. You won't believe, but these conversations help me probably more than they help you. So I thank you. I thank Brian Price for connecting us. But thank you so much for including me, in these conversations. And you, this book, Happy Soul, Hungry Mind, the more I think about it, every time I read it, I read it like a reader, and I forget that I wrote it. And I don't know when I wrote it and how I wrote it. All of that has washed away. But when I read it,
yep,
this book affects me. It reminds me, and I will confess that there are situations in life that I face, and I get stuck, and then a thought goes to my mind and say, do what the book says. It's written in the book. And I go, of course it is written
right
in the book. It's amazing what we write becomes our own guide. And
isn't that the
I think
truth?
Happy Soul, Hungry Mind has such a powerful message for the human race. I mean, we all need to look at that message, because it's a message which is devoid of any blind faith. It does not require you to take a leap of faith. It's logic, and it explains the most important questions that people have been asking, not just now, but for thousands of years. And if you have a listener who is not asking those questions, then he or she must start asking those questions, because that is how you're going to change your perspective on life. It is incredible. I mean, I thank the universe. I thank God. I thank all the people who have been in my life, including my parents, from whom I have learned that all of that I have heard has come out in this book. And I am thankful. I am thankful that that this book now exists. It is incredible when I think about that, and I say, oh my, this is incredible.
Well, I look forward to my second conversation already. I have hours and hours of conversation that I can have with you, but I'm going to stay in the present. So I'm going to enjoy this one. I'm going to absorb this. I'm going to encourage anyone who is listening to go to Amazon and look for Happy Mind. I look for Happy Soul, Hungry Mind, and the link is right here on the console. And just click there and get it and read it and apply it. It will conflict with nothing, and it will challenge you about everything.
How beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. That is
right.
A great way to put it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you, audience. And Ravi, we will be talking soon.
Thank you, audience. Please let us know about questions or comments once you read the book, and even otherwise. We'd love to be able to have a conversation with you. So thank you. And thank you again, Mr. Dennis. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ravi. Bye-bye.